Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are at 12:12 on this Thursday afternoon. Welcome to the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll talk a little bit about Steven Spielberg and his take on Netflix. You know, the big studios are a little worried about Netflix's influence, and there was a war of words today. Earlier this week. We'll sort that out a little bit in the second half hour of the program. But right now we say hello to Ian Schur, a senior editor at CNET.com. He joins us on most Thursdays. Ian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. So I'm looking at some of the stories on CNET, and we have talked a lot, and you have explained to me how 5G is going to change the world, and some phone carriers already are claiming to have a form of 5G and all of that. And then I read this story at CNET where it says, don't buy your 5G phones just yet. What's that about?
Yeah, so part of the interesting issue here is that typically when these rollouts happen, what ends up happening is that the phones out there have more technology in them than the wireless cell towers that are able to actually deliver internet to you. So we found that typically it's good to wait about a year until after 5G is launched for all the bugs to get worked out, right? That means that making sure the chips are more efficient, they're not draining your battery as fast. When the first 4G phones came out, battery life was terrible. And also making sure there's enough coverage, right?
You don't want to buy a first year of a new car model, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the same thing. And, you know, what's going to be interesting and complicating it this year is that a lot of the phone makers are jumping on this 5G bandwagon way quicker than they did last year. We're tracking all of the major phones that are supposed to be available in the fall, and almost every one of them is going to have a 5G version. So it's going to get to a point where the phone carriers may force us all, if you're going to buy a phone this year, to buy a 5G phone, which is going to put people in a precarious situation. So it's going to be interesting.
Right. Okay, so because if you're going to get a new phone, it's going to have to be 5G, and if it's the first year of the 5G, it's not going to be the best 5G. So that means you're just going to get a new phone 2 years in a row, which is what they want. They control the world.
Right. They definitely want more money, that's for sure.
I was texting with my son today because he plays video games, and I frankly have never. I don't understand it. It's just I was just a little too old for that. But there's a story about how the Xbox One is going to go discless. Now, I was asking him about this because he plays via online with other people all the time, but he said some of his games still are on a disc, or some of them are downloaded, but none is internet-driven. So it seems to me like if they get rid of disc games, that could be a problem for GameStop, for one, right?
GameStop is the biggest one who's going to lose out here. So, you know, it's interesting. For years, I've been tracking this since I was at the Wall Street Journal. Sony and Microsoft have really considered getting rid of discs a number of times. The PlayStation 4, which came out in 2013, Sony was actually seriously considering getting rid of a disc then. But they realized that just going downloadable games, we're talking about massive, massive downloads, right? 10 times bigger than a movie. And a lot of people in other countries or even, you know, military people on ships and in war zones, they play games when they're in off time, and it's a lot harder for them to download a game than to ship a CD to them. So this is going to be an interesting change, and Xbox apparently is deciding to offer what they're going to position as a cheaper Xbox, right? So they're not getting rid of the disc entirely. They're just going to have a version of it that's the cheapest one they have. That's going to be called the all-digital Xbox, and that one will not have a disk drive. And we're going to see whether people want it.
So, but then if you want to play the game, you're still going to have to buy then the downloadable version. So the money you might be saving with the cheaper version, you're going to put some out anyway.
Right. No, and it's absolutely, you know, you're going to still be dealing with the App Store and all that type of stuff. What's going to happen is you're not going to have a disk anymore that you can bring to GameStop and get your money back if you want to trade it in. And that's what's really fascinating, right? GameStop's business has basically dissolved over the last few years. And, I mean, we see their stock just going to the floor and further. They tried to sell themselves. They couldn't even sell themselves. So, it's an interesting change in behavior, and a lot of people moving in this direction where discs are eventually probably going to go the way of the dodo.
You know, Ian, it's been a long time since I've gone to a GameStop with my son, so I didn't realize they were on hard times. It's only logical, but, man, back in the day, that was the place to go. You'd bring your old games, you'd trade them in, sell them for dirt cheap, and then get an upgrade.
And you know, the CEO of GameStop back a few years ago, Paul Raines, who I spoke to many times, really nice guy. One time I asked him about this idea, and you know, basically I'm asking him, when is your business going to evaporate, right? And he said, and he said to me, look, Ian, it's like death and taxes. Eventually, it's going to come. I just don't know when.
It's funny,
and I think that was really smart of him, right? He knew that this was eventually going to happen, but. At the time, he was betting it wouldn't happen too quick.
I just did a story today about there's only one Blockbuster left in the U.S., two in the world, one in the U.S. in Oregon, but it's the same sort of thing, GameStop. Well, we hardly knew you. Okay, we've got less than a minute, but Google seems like they're mired once again into whether they are or are not helping China censor the Internet. What's up there?
Yeah, so you may remember Google had a version of its search engine in China back in 2010, and it would do stuff like if you search for the Tiananmen Square massacre, it would not show up a result.
Never
because
happened.
That's what the Chinese government wanted.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
So Google left China over a bunch of other stuff, including hacking concerns and stuff, but now it seems like they're considering trying to go back, and they created a version of their search engine inside of Google that followed China's rules. And this created a big kerfuffle, a lot of protests inside Silicon Valley. Google since has backed off. They say that they're not actively looking at it. But there are still reverberations and challenges where people say, well, wait a minute, it looks like you're still building it. What are you doing? And Google is trying very hard to get ahead of this and say, look, we're not going to do it. Don't worry. But there's still little indications they might be.
It's got to be tempting, right? It's a huge market to give up.
Over a billion people and a lot of money they could be losing. And look, Google is like any business, right? They may want to say that they're not evil and all these types of things, but at the end of the day, you can't ignore a market of a billion people. And the challenge is that how do you do that while still being Google? And that's the really hard part for them.
That's Ian Schur, senior editor at CNET.com. Read a lot more there. Ian, great to talk to you today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take care.
It's 12:23 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here. Bill Geiger is in the studio as well. Our conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So I'm coming up on my 25th wedding anniversary this summer.
Congrats.
Thank you very much. That's silver, right? I think that's silver.
It's out of my pay grade.
Okay, so paper is one, wood is two. So what's 10? Do you know what 10 is?
I have no idea.
We're celebrating a 10th anniversary coming up this weekend that most of us would like to forget.
We would. That was the big downturn in 2008, 2009.
So 10 years ago, this 10 coming
years ago,
was the market
10 years
low?
Ago, March the 9th was the absolute bottom.
And I was 46 then. And
how old are you now?
I'm going to say
56, right?
I went to journalism school, so I'm not sure the number, but I'm going to say 56.
56. And we were talking about this before the show, is that was 10 years ago. So we're all 10 years older, right?
Right.
We're 10 years closer to retirement, and we have 10 years less to make up for a big loss at this stage of our life.
And so you can look at it you can look at it from the comfort level and say, well, I've recovered, you know, things have come back, so I'm okay now compared to where I was 10 years ago. But the fact is, if it happens next year or the year after or next month.
Listen, we say this till we're blue in the face. If you're late 50s, early 60s, it's time to do things just a little bit differently. You don't have 30 years to make back a big loss.
Right.
And you have to hang on to what you have. You still have to make it grow, but you cannot have big losses at this stage of your life.
We also are in the midst of the longest economic recovery or second longest.
This is the longest boom.
So this isn't going to happen every time
history.
Either. Right.
And it's not going to last forever. They just don't. They go back from the beginning of time, and they're cycles, right?
I was doing a story for this weekend about Challenger Grain Christmas was out today with their job cuts report for February,
uh-huh.
and it was up 45% from January, It's been steadily climbing. I think it was up 117% from last February. So, I mean, the job market's still very hot, yeah. but the number of job cuts continues to grow, too.
Yeah, big companies.
Reorganizing,
letting people go. And sometimes you have a plan for your retirement, and you get cut, and that plan needs to be adjusted. That wasn't in your plan.
What do we do if we get closer and we're worried about situations like this?
Well, I think a really big deal is to make sure that you're thinking about how you're going to pay your bills in retirement. And we don't think about that. We think about just building a, we talked about this, just build a big pile of money and we kind
pick
of
pick at it when you need it.
Yeah,
right.
We just kind of pick at it. That doesn't always work. That's how people end up running out of money in retirement. You need, and this is what you should be thinking about when you're getting late 50s, early 60s, you need to structure dependable, sustainable income for you. We've got a number of different strategies we use to do this, but you think about this. If you retire and you know how you're going to pay your bills each month, it kind of takes the stress out of things, doesn't it?
Right.
You know how you're going to do it. And if you have more income coming in than what you actually need, that's nirvana.
So the I just lost track of my thought, but the idea is then to I know what I was going to say. So it's like, well, but we're in this long recovery. Things have been going really well, right? To protect your money doesn't mean you're taking your money out of the game.
No. Imagine yourself, you're at a crap table and you've been laying down big bets.
Right.
Right? And you're way ahead. Is it going to last forever?
It is not going to last forever, Bill.
So maybe it's time to dial back the size of your bets.
Right.
So if you lose, it's not the end of the world for you. Listen, we tried something last week. Remember this?
The $250,000.
The $250,000, yeah. Because we had so many requests for this. And we had a lot of calls, Steve, and we're helping a lot of people. And I'd like to do that again.
I'm glad you're doing that, because I do hear from people say, I'd like to check it out, yeah. but I'm not quite at half a mil.
So instead of $500,000, if folks have $250,000 or up, the first five callers, we're going to sit down, we're going to help them, we're going to help them put together a full-blown complimentary plan for their retirement.
Bill Geiger, nice to see you.
Good to see you, sir.
Go out and enjoy the spring, will you?
Will do.
Are you confident that you're doing everything you can, everything you should be doing to prepare for retirement? Well, Bill Geiger and his team at Geiger Wealth can help you answer those questions, and they've got this opportunity that Bill was just telling you about. They'll sit down with you personally to create a full-blown plan for your retirement. It's up to a $3,000 value, and it's free for the first five callers who have at least $250,000 saved for retirement. Call 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. At this stage of your life, you probably have more money than you've ever had before, and the last thing you need now is a big loss. Together with you, Bill and his team are going to translate the complex financial planning process into easy-to-understand steps with a personalized, full-blown retirement plan. It's designed to help you retire with confidence. Call Geiger Wealth right now for your complimentary, personalized, full-blown retirement plan. 800-681-2498. I'll give you that number again. It's 800-681-2498. Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch in Chicago's very own 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. We're going to talk about fudging on your resume, but real quick, I just want to say, you know, the trip to Portugal that we had sold out in 3 weeks. We didn't even advertise it. I just mentioned it on the show a few times, and we filled up lickety-split. I've never led three trips in a year, but we're going to do it this year. So because there's been such demand, we're actually going to add a trip to Ireland. Coming up in September, Sharon and I are going to go back to Sharon's home turf of Ireland, visit her family, and we want you to come with us. It'll be September 13th. We're still working on the details of it. We just kind of decided to do it, but that's the date. We'll do, I think, the Dingle Peninsula, Cliffs of Moher, Dublin, and the Wicklow Mountains, too, with any luck. So keep your eyes out for that. If you want more information, send me an email, steve@stevebertrandtravel.com, and I'll get it to you right away. But I just want to give you a heads up, because that will go as well pretty quickly. We're going to go to Ireland come September. On the phone line now is Larry Shannon Missel. He's the head of U.S. Data Services at YouGov.com. Larry, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you very much for having me.
I haven't had to do a resume in a really long time. I'm fortunate that way. I'd like to think I would be honest on it, but you guys looked at some numbers and by generation, and you know, I'm not sure how to approach this, Larry, because on the one hand, we might indict people of a certain age, but I think instead maybe it speaks of the time we're in now, that people are more likely to cheat a little bit than they would have been 20, 30, 40 years ago. But tell me why you looked at this and tell me how it breaks down when it comes to the different generations.
Well, as to why we looked at it, to be honest, it might sound a little insane at first, but somebody got on our team got the idea from the ever-evolving story with Jussie Smollett.
Okay.
How all of this whole plot was all to further a career. So while we weren't trying to directly tie to that, it did get us thinking.
Larry,
find acceptable?
I got to tell you, I'm sitting here at the Allstate Skyline Studio right on the Michigan River, or Chicago River, and as I look over my shoulder, I see Jussie's building. So that alleged attack happened about 100 yards from here.
Wow.
And so he was doing that to further his career. You take that to look at then different generations, and it looks like it's the millennials who were more likely than any, really by far, to stretch the truth when it comes to making stuff up to get a job.
Well, to be clear, yes, millennials are over-indexing against the rest of the population, but I do want to be clear about what we were asking. We were asking to what extent people find it acceptable, not whether they had done it themselves.
Would do it. Okay.
We weren't asking them to self-incriminate. But yes, we were looking at to what extent on a 4-point scale people find it acceptable to stretch the truth on their resume to get hired or to stretch the truth to get ahead in a career.
Okay, and so
and what we saw as yeah, oh, sorry,
no,
ahead.
No, you go ahead, Larry. I'm sorry.
No problem. But what we saw was not just millennials standing out, but also we found men, people with lower levels of education, and also those with kids under 18 in the house. What that says to me is the through line is need. Whether it's because people are younger and have less experience in an ever more competitive marketplace, or people who have higher levels of responsibility,
right,
whether seen by society or self-imposed. And so that seemed to be kind of a common thread tying all this together.
Well, and maybe that's what I was getting at a little bit. Baby boomers, when you look at stretching the truth on your resume, 14% said it was acceptable, 40% of millennials. So there's a big difference there. And the general public, I think, was at 25%, the same as Gen Xers. And so, in a way, what you could be saying is that the need to do that for baby boomers is far lower than it is for millennials. So the sort of social or internal pressure to declare it acceptable would be much less as well.
I think that that's definitely along the lines that I was thinking as well. Yes.
Yeah, because you know I love millennials. They get blamed for so much. So that's where you know I almost think that you know they are living in a time when truthiness matters less than when I was coming of age, or maybe then I'm not sure of your age, but maybe when you were coming of age. I mean, do you think there's anything to that?
I think there definitely is. Let's say that even though older age groups might be saying it's less acceptable, we have to acknowledge that we have raised millennials in a world where we do, on more probably more frequently than we'd like to admit, see people stretch the truth, perhaps even publicly and obviously, and get ahead nonetheless. So
right.
We are raising them in a world where this is reality to at least some of the population.
I mean, one millennial I know very well said, yeah, we were talking about this subject. He says, right, we're told fake it till you make it. And this is part of faking it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, so that's the age group. So then take me to gender, where it looks like men are more likely to stretch the truth than women. Does that go?
Correct.
And does that go by age, or is that pretty much gender specific?
It's to be perfectly honest, I don't have a cross break in front of me
age, okay.
looks at age and gender both broken out in a correlative fashion, but we do see men more accepting of stretching the truth than women.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is, Larry?
Well, I think it's partly pressure to earn, as stereotypical as it sounds, and I acknowledge that. It is an age-old stereotype, bygone of years go by, of the male breadwinner. But at the same time, there is, at least in some segments, still societal pressure. And certainly we have to recognize that while society may be moving on from that archetype, there is certain level of self-imposed pressure some men will still place on themselves.
I like that. I think that's true. I have to tell you, I'm really enjoying this conversation because we're moving toward understanding rather than pointing fingers or blame. And I like that view of it, which might be a little more difficult when it comes to liberals versus conservatives. So liberals, according to the numbers, more likely to fudge than conservatives. Why is that?
First of all, again, I will circle back to not necessarily more likely to fudge, likely to accept.
Thank you very much.
That people do so. But one thing that I think is important to reinforce here is that liberals skew younger. So a lot of what we may be seeing here is not necessarily a causal relationship between political philosophy and philosophy on this particular subject, but just a correlation to the fact that these are younger people and so are exhibiting the perceptions of the younger age set.
A 25-year-old is more likely to be blue and his 65-year-old father more likely to be red.
Correct.
Larry Shannon Missile is the head of U.S. Data Services at YouGov.com. I enjoyed the talk, Larry. Thank you very much. I hope we can chat again.
I certainly hope so as well. Take care.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Are you an Uber or a Lyft person? Well, if you're looking for a job, you might become an Uber person soon, because they're hiring in Chicago and looking for a big, new, shiny office space as well. They're looking to build out hundreds of jobs for their Uber freighting business, and it's going to have a lot of eyes on it. Much of the freighting industry is expected to become automated as self-driving cars become bigger and better. And it makes sense that they're building out that part of the business here in Chicago, since we're really good at logistics. No, seriously. Like, we're really good. But what's already here in Chicago is the new Allbirds shoe store. If you haven't heard of these before, you've probably seen them, and you might have had no idea that they existed. It's a San Francisco-based company that makes wool-based casual shoes, and they raised over $70 million, and they're valued at $1.4 billion. It's their fourth store that's at 843 West Armitage, and it's as slick and clean styled as you can imagine. And in the world of retail, the company will surely still toe the line between retailer online and physical store presence. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, here on 720 WGN. All right, maybe you saw the news that earlier this week, Steven Spielberg said that Netflix movies like, well, Roma, should maybe not be considered for Academy Awards because they are on streaming services just as much as they're in the theaters, and that is sort of set off this bit of a mini war and debate about just the role of Netflix and its future. Sarah Fisher wrote about that for Axios.com. She joins us on a phone line now. Sarah, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Tell me about this little kerfuffle. What's Spielberg beefing about?
Yeah, so people like Steven Spielberg, who are considered part of the old guard of entertainment, have a problem with some of these streaming companies like Netflix or Amazon Prime being eligible for Oscars. What they're saying is, look, it's not the same type of movie experience as you would get from a traditional movie that gets displayed in a theater. These movies are made for TV. It's not the same cinematic experience, and thus they shouldn't be contenders for Oscars. But there's a lot of blowback from the creative community, people who are saying, look, you just feel threatened by the competition. These movies are no different. And so I would expect to see this fight continue as Netflix continues to grow bigger and some of those studios continue to struggle to find their footing.
So Roma, though, was in theaters, correct? It just was barely in theaters and just enough to qualify for the Academy Awards.
That's exactly right. Netflix did a big campaign around Roma. They spent roughly $30 million to ensure that people knew that it was eligible for Oscars, but they really didn't put this film out widely. They only had it in theaters in select places like New York and LA, where they knew Academy stakeholders would be, and they only distributed it at the bare minimum to be eligible for an Oscar. Otherwise, they really hardly made any studio revenue.
So I understand why Spielberg might be upset, and the theater companies would be upset too if the big movies, the awards, are going to shows we watch on TV. But I would think Netflix has to sort of court the theater industry as well, or they would just refuse to screen their movies altogether.
It's a very good point. Netflix has to do this dicey dance where they need to be respectful of theaters in order to make sure that they get the distribution that they need to be Oscar contenders. But at the same time, there's an argument to be made that Netflix's business directly impacts that of the theater business. People are not going to spend as much money going to the movie theater, and they can pay $10 a month and get unlimited movies. So Netflix has to do this delicate dance, but I'll say this. There is something that is beneficial to the theater owners, which is that once something is nominated for an Oscar, people want to go see it. It does bring in revenue for them. And so if Netflix can continue to put out Oscar-nominated quality films, it could be good for the theater owners as well.
And so Netflix is, well, it's just a remarkable company to me because, you know, it was Sarah dead so many times and now it's come back stronger than ever. It's facing some threats as well now as more big companies go to their own online channels, right? Disney, I think, Warner Media doing the same. I mean, is Netflix facing a future existential threat, or are they going to be fine through all of this?
I think that Netflix is going to be fine, at least in the short term, through all of this, because all of those people that are coming in to eat Netflix's lunch have a long way to go till they can get there. You talk about Warner Media, they don't have a plan for developing original content in the near future. Let's talk about NBC. That's an ad-supported play. It's not going to be the same type of engagement that you're going to get from Netflix that has no ads. And then is the big one, which would be Disney Plus, Disney's version of a Netflix. Now, that will pose some threat. I mean, Disney content is going to be lifted off of Netflix, of course, because they want to put it on their own service. But at the end of the day, that is going to still be something that I think families buy in addition to Netflix, because Netflix is going to continue to spend billions of dollars on original programming for all types of generations. I can imagine that in this sort of bifurcated world, people will buy one or two streaming services. It'll be a Netflix and something else.
That's Sarah Fisher. She writes about it at Axios.com. Sarah, great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.